January 2026 Best Buys. Welcome to this audio issue of Porter Stansberry's Complete Investor, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. January 2026 Best Buys when investors sell shares to gain year-end tax losses. This is Porter & Company's Best Buys, which we publish monthly as part of Porter Stansberry's Complete Investor. If you're not yet a subscriber to Best Buys, to access the full paid issue and our previous Best Buys, please click here. Yellow was not John Shrake's color, particularly when it was in his beard, in his mouth, dripping into his eyes, and defacing most of his farm buildings. But the Liberty loan enforcers figured John deserved a gallon of paint to the face, plus a few more sloshed over his property. After all, he was a yellow-bellied coward who wouldn't buy Liberty bonds. Pacifist John, a Mennonite farmer from Arkansas, didn't believe in funding wars. And Liberty bonds, government bonds earmarked to fight the Germans in World War I, were just a poorly disguised war tax. John said as much, in German, his native tongue. That went over as well as you'd expect. Coughing through the paint, John offered the loan enforcers $200 to give to the Red Cross instead. They refused. He raised his eyes in prayer. They tossed a noose around his neck and jostled him in the direction of a big tree. It was 1918, and Americans on the home front had a simple choice: buy government debt or take a bath in paint. Or worse. Unsurprisingly, the aggressive bond drive was a Democrat initiative, helmed by the progressive dream team of President Woodrow Wilson and Treasury Secretary William McAdoo. Americans were still relatively new to the idea of an income tax. The first modest compulsory tax hit the books in 1913. But with the doughboys headed to France in 1917, Wilson needed to beef up his war chest, fast. The president tasked charismatic McAdoo, who was also his son-in-law, with funding the Great War, an ambitious project that would cost around $32 billion, over half the gross national product. McAdoo's financing plan was two-pronged. He'd tap the country's richer folks, making $5,000 a year or more, with a steep mandatory income tax, anywhere from 13% to 77%. And he'd heavily encourage the poorer folks to buy war bonds, a government loan that matured in 30 years and paid 3.5% interest. Assisted by Ed Bernays, famed con man and father of the shadier side of American advertising, McAdoo blitzed the country with flashy Liberty loan campaigns. He dropped leaflets from airplanes and plastered walls nationwide with guilt-tripping posters: "If you can't enlist, invest." And "My daddy bought a bond. Did yours?" Buying war bonds was voluntary, with a heavy side of "or else." Ku Klux Klan-style bands of volunteer Liberty loan enforcers roamed the country searching for bond slackers like John Shrake. There were also more organized efforts. During an event called Policeman's Day, teams of policemen canvassed towns knocking on doors with pointed suggestions that the folks hiding behind those doors go out and buy a bond or two. As one Colorado newspaper described it, "Every person, without exception, will be visited and solicited." W hear those solicited make disloyal remarks against the government or criticize the merit of the government bonds, or are discourteous toward the lieutenants, detailed reports will be made and the matter turned over to the Secret Service Department for investigation. Shrake didn't swing, in the end. A local sheriff stepped up and threw him into jail to keep him from being lynched. Later, when he was hauled before federal court in Wichita, Kansas, the sedition case against him fell apart. No one could prove he'd said anything against the government, since he'd mainly spoken German. Other slackers weren't so lucky. One community of farmers in South Dakota refused to pony up for war bonds, so the loan enforcers confiscated their entire livelihood, 100 head of cattle and 1,000 sheep. A group of five dissenters at a factory were taken by the heels and dipped into a steel tank used for heating oil for the colliery engines. Not surprisingly, everyone at the factory took out a Liberty loan the next day. Aided by these types of gentle incitements, war bond turnout was impressive, with 20 million people, out of just 24 million households in America, buying $17 billion worth of the securities. Another $8.8 billion rolled into the coffers from the double-digit tax on the well-to-do. The press lionized McAdoo's cash grab as the most magnificent economic achievement of any people, inspired by the finest and purest patriotism. In reality, America's rich people, just like poor folks, were tired of McAdoo's crap. Early on in the increasingly expensive war effort, the nation's 1% also figured out ways to dodge McAdoo's tax, while avoiding the hangman's noose and buckets of yellow paint. Assets disappeared into complex corporations and Swiss banks. Clever accounting magicked away millions. On paper, anyway. But perhaps the most ingenious tax shelter was the wash sale. Washed overboard wash sales, or tax loss sales are a way to report a temporary loss on your stock holdings for the year, so you won't have to pay taxes on those gains. For instance, let's say you have $100,000 in capital gains and are holding a losing stock at year-end that's down $50,000. If you keep holding the losing stock, you'll owe taxes on the $100,000. But if you sell the losing stock before December 31st, you reduce your tax bill down to $50,000. Then you can buy back in, ideally, at a nice discount. Wash sales first popped up in an innocent letter to the editor in the Wall Street Journal in November 1920. Where a reader known only as RHT wrote that his portfolio was currently down about $750,000, in today's dollars, after a Spanish flu-related sell-off. "I do not want to sell these stocks at the present market," he wrote, carefully not mentioning McAdoo's punitive taxes. "Would it be legal for me to sell these stocks and deduct the loss from this year's income, even though I bought them the same day?" The Wall Street Journal, which was apparently allowed to give personalized investment advice back then, replied that yes, it was legal. The unspoken understanding that this was a tremendous way to get out of capital gains taxes set off a flurry of tax loss selling, a strategy that a 1921 U.S. Senate committee report called evasion through the medium of wash sales. The government hated wash sales, but the American people hated taxes with an even deeper passion. After years of bucking bonds and dodging the IRS, voters kicked Democratic President Woodrow Wilson and Secretary McAdoo out of office in 1920. Tax-slashing Republican Warren G. Harding took over, aided by new Treasury Secretary Andrew Mellon, known as the father of trickle-down economics. Pragmatic Mellon, a fan of scientific taxation, where both rich and poor people paid lower taxes, and no one got off scot-free, drafted the well-received Revenue Act of 1921, which reduced income taxes, broadened exemptions, and got rid of luxury and transportation taxes. It also explicitly prohibited wash sales to ensure that everyone ponied up their fair share. Thanks to Mellon's tax reforms, Americans pocketed enough extra cash to start speculating, wildly, in the stock market. Inevitably, the Roaring Twenties gave way to the Great Depression, and big government stepped in once again to raise taxes and distribute handouts, a vicious cycle that is ongoing today. Interestingly, wash sales are still going on too. Mellon's prohibition, still on the books, is just vague enough for clever fund managers to engineer workarounds. Rather than selling and buying the same stock, they might sell and buy similar stocks or exchange-traded funds in order to write off a loss on paper. And, while Mellon's law doesn't provide the tax deduction if you buy substantially identical stocks within 60 days of each other, he didn't mention anything about day 61. Tax loss harvesting is big business for firms like Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, which have whole teams devoted to it. If you look at the tax records of the world's richest men, like Sam Walton, of the Walmart fortune, you'll typically see a series of small losses right around the end of each year. In 2018, an astonishing two-thirds of Americans worth over $10 million reported net short-term losses. Those are all wash sales. You're seeing smart billionaires fudge their taxes in real time. Frequently, you're also seeing a series of artificially generated sell-offs in stocks that don't deserve the beating. Year-end wash selling often sets the stage for a recovery in early January. Once the tax year deadline passes, the outside selling pressure vanishes. Investors who were sitting on the sidelines to avoid wash sale violations often move back into these depressed stocks, leading to a mean reversion or a bounce in price. That's the case for the company heading up our best buys this month, a world-class energy business temporarily depressed by outside circumstances, which made it an easy target for tax loss selling. The January rebound for this firm has already begun, as shares are up more than 20% to start the year. If you're not already a subscriber to Best Buys, click here or call our customer care team at 888-610-8895 or internationally at +1-443-815-4447 for more information on getting access to this publication. 1. Venture Global, NYSE, VG, Venture Global, NYSE, VG, whose shares dropped more than 30% near the end of 2025, is a fast-growing liquefied natural gas, LNG, exporter founded in 2013. It launched its initial public offering, IPO, 1 year ago, in January 2025. Why we recommended Venture Global? Venture Global was founded by Michael Sobel and Robert Pender based on a simple yet bold proposal: to build LNG projects faster, cheaper, and better than anyone else. The company pioneered a new approach to LNG terminal construction, based on smaller liquefaction trains, pre-built in off-site facilities and shipped directly to the project site. Compared with the traditional method of custom-building LNG terminals, this results in more of a plug-and-play approach. The hard work of building the most critical element of the project, the liquefaction train, is already completed beforehand and off-site. Thus, the only work left to do is set up the supporting infrastructure, power generation, pipeline connections, etc., and put all the pieces together. The company calls this the design one, build many approach, meaning it only needs to create one liquefaction train design, which can then be used for all future projects. This makes Venture Global's construction process highly scalable and repeatable, instead of starting each project with a new customized design. This more efficient construction method allowed the company to complete its first project, the 12.4 million ton per annum, MTL Calcasieu Pass LNG terminal, in record time. The project received final investment decision, the official go-ahead, in August 2019, and began shipping its first cargo less than 2.5 years later in Q1 2022. That's a full year faster than the timeline for a comparable facility brought online by Venture Global's key competitor Cheniere Energy, LNG, America's leading LNG exporter. The beauty of this modular approach is that it's highly scalable, meaning additional larger facilities can be brought online in roughly the same amount of time. Venture Global completed its second project, the Plaquemines LNG terminal, with twice the capacity as its first project, in roughly the same amount of time. It simply shipped in twice as many pre-built liquefaction trains, raising the number from 18 to 36. Venture Global now has two facilities producing LNG, its Calcasieu Pass and Plaquemines terminals. The record speed of construction allowed the company to rapidly scale up its business from zero earnings in 2021 to an expected $6.6 billion in EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, in 2025. That's just 5% shy of what Cheniere is expected to generate in 2025. Venture Global expects to generate $15 billion in revenue this year. And this is just the beginning. Venture Global has received federal approval and has now entered the construction phase of its next project, known as Calcasieu Pass 2, CP2. With a nameplate capacity of 28 MPTA, CP2 will be America's largest LNG terminal. Venture Global expects to begin producing cargoes at full scale by the late 2020s, at which point it should overtake Cheniere as America's leading LNG exporter. The company also has two massive projects in the works following CP2, which, if completed, would make Venture Global the single largest LNG exporter in the world, exceeding the capacity of the entire country of current global leader Qatar. Why Venture Global is a best buy? Venture Global's finances and share price suffered following a legal setback in arbitration proceedings with oil giant BP. The dispute stemmed from LNG cargo deliveries that Venture Global diverted away from BP in 2022 toward the higher price spot market. However, the legal liability is not a thesis killer, and rather easily absorbed by Venture Global's $6.6 billion projected 2025 EBITDA and deep access capital. The market's fear of contagion to other legacy 2022 disputes is overstated. With contract structures now amended to prevent recurrence and the LNG demand story unchanged, the other legal proceedings would be a one-time cash hit that ultimately clears the deck for a cleaner operating future, making shares worthy of best buy status. With Venture Global on the verge of securing regulatory approval for its third project, we believe now is the time to own a share in what will soon become America's leading LNG exporter. At our buy-up to price of $20 per share, Venture's enterprise value, EV, comes out to $78 billion. That reflects a forward valuation multiple of 11.8x EV/EBITDA, based on 2025 estimated EBITDA of $6.6 billion. Conversely, the $78 billion EV of Venture's main competitor Cheniere translates into a forward EV/EBITDA ratio of 11.3x. At $6 per share, Venture Global trades for less than 8x EV/EBITDA. We believe Venture should command a significant valuation premium over Cheniere, given the advantages of its construction approach, its aggressive future expansion potential, and its track record of successfully executing on prior growth plans. Action to take: buy Venture Global, NYSE, VG, up to $20 per share to The Hershey Company, NYSE, HSY. The Hershey Company, NYSE, HSY, has been making chocolate, and now other sweets and salty snacks, since Milton Hershey founded the company in 1894. Why we recommended Hershey in business for more than 130 years, Hershey owns a portfolio of some of the most iconic candy brands of all time, including Hershey's Bars, Hershey's Kisses, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Kit Kat, Twizzlers, and Almond Joy. The enduring value of these and other brands allows it to sell more candy every year, at ever-increasing prices. As a result, Hershey has consistently grown revenue, earned hefty profit margins, and returned a steady and growing share of profits to shareholders through dividends and share buybacks. Since Porter first recommended Hershey in 2007, the company has grown revenue 134% or 4.8% annually. However, what is more impressive is that during this period, Hershey's earnings per share, EPS, increased a phenomenal 590% or 11.3% annually. Hershey shares are up 4% from when we recommended them at $185 in April 2024. For more than a year, skyrocketing cocoa prices contributed to Hershey's share price decline as the cost of this key ingredient soared above $10,000 per metric ton. The price of cocoa has since declined 50%, and the share price has slowly begun to recover. Why Hershey is a best buy? Hershey beat expectations across the board in its Q3 earnings report on October 30th, with EPS of $1.30, 24 cents ahead of expectations, and revenue of $3.18 billion, $60 million better than analyst estimates. The notable takeaway from the Q3 report was that Hershey appears to have regained its pricing power, notching a 6% increase in prices while volumes remained steady. The company reported strong results across all major segments, including a 5% increase in North American confectionery sales, a 10% increase in North American salty snacks, and 12% growth in international revenue. Margins remained tight due to the high cocoa prices locked in via this year's hedging program, with gross margins down 8.5 percentage points year-over-year to 31.8%. However, the good news is that cocoa prices have dropped by over 65% from a peak of $12,800 per ton last December to $4,420 currently. Based on the strength of its latest results and lower costs from falling cocoa prices, Hershey raised its 2025 guidance to 3% sales growth, up from 2% previously. The company expects to earn $5.95 per share this year, and we expect this will be the low point in Hershey's earnings going forward. With revenue on track to reach $12 billion in 2026, that puts our estimate of normalized net income at between $1.8 billion to $2.4 billion. At a current market capitalization of $38 billion, that puts Hershey's forward P/E ratio at between 16x and 21x. That's a compelling bargain for one of the most iconic brands of all time. Action to take: buy the Hershey Company, NYSE, HSY, up to $200 per share. 3. Booz Allen Hamilton, NYSE, BAH. Booz Allen Hamilton, NYSE, BA. Why we recommended Booz Allen. Founder Edwin Booz started this company in 1914 to solve his clients' most difficult issues through the use of science. Years later, a business owner Booz had worked with became the Secretary of the Navy, and asked Booz and his partner James Allen to help get the country ready for World War II. They created detailed flowcharts, pioneered performance metrics, and introduced what would now be called change management. In essence, Booz and Allen taught the Navy how to think like a business, and to do it fast. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, the U.S. entered the war with its military infrastructure in better shape than it had ever been. Once the war ended, America didn't go back to business as usual. The military-industrial complex had been born, and it needed permanent upkeep. Edwin Booz and James' firm, Booz Allen, became the gold standard for this new world. Booz Allen expanded its federal work, taking on clients across the Pentagon, the CIA, NASA, and later the Department of Homeland Security. What had started with a few consultants and Navy offices grew into thousands of employees supporting nearly every major federal agency. Today, the firm helps lead cybersecurity efforts, engineer artificial intelligence, AI, systems for defense, and even advise on space operations. Booz Allen is a $12 billion market cap company that generated $11.9 billion in revenue in 2025, an increase of 12% over 2024. By relying primarily on human and intangible capital, the business is highly capital efficient, generating 57% returns on equity over the past 5 years. And it has quietly been one of the best performing stocks in the market, generating 16% compounded annual return since going public in 2010. About 95% of all Booz Allen revenue comes from the U.S. government. Close to 50% of the company's sales are to defense customers, 35% are in the civil segment, and most of the rest is in national security. Booz is the number one provider of cybersecurity services to the government. Cyber makes up about $3 billion in revenue to Booz each year, about 25% of the total company. Nowhere is that more evident right now than in AI. The proliferation of AI is one of the most powerful themes in the stock market today. The federal government is working to accelerate its AI capabilities for greater productivity and efficiency. The firm is the number one provider of AI services to the U.S. government. It does 8x more business with the government than its nearest competitor. Smart investors like businesses with wide moats. Booz has over 35,000 total employees. Within that, there are 22,000 technologists, 6,000 top-tier software engineers, 8,000 cyber professionals, and 2,500 AI experts. About 70% of their employees hold security clearances, and 28% of their employees are former military. Talk about a wide moat that would be tough for anyone to replicate. Though its Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, initiative has lost steam since Elon Musk first began rooting his way around departments and agencies earlier this year, the Trump administration is looking for ways to slash government spending and increase efficiency. That has meant headcount reductions, spending cuts, and contract reviews. Booz Allen's civil division has felt more pressure from cuts. In fact, just this week, U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent announced that the Trump administration was canceling all of Booz Allen's contracts with his department, as part of President Trump's push to root out waste, fraud, and abuse. However, it's important to note that these contracts amount to just $4.8 million in annual revenue, $21 million in total, a tiny percentage of the firm's total governmental revenue. Additionally, this move appears to be a targeted response to the case of Charles Littlejohn, a Booz Allen employee who has pled guilty to felony charges of stealing and leaking confidential tax information of hundreds of thousands of taxpayers, including the president, between 2018 and 2020, rather than the start of a broader initiative. So while Booz Allen's civil business revenue is expected to decline by low double digits, widespread contract cancellations remain unlikely. Why Booz Allen Hamilton is a best buy? Investors should think of these cuts more as a reset rather than the end. Civil revenue is expected to resume growth this year. DOGE is essentially dead, and Booz investors have probably seen the worst of its actions. And meanwhile, Booz isn't just sitting idly by. The company is reducing its own headcount 7% in response to sluggish revenue. This should position Booz well for the future. Why should investors be so confident in a rebound here? This goes back to the benefits of being a legal monopoly. Being entrenched as a dominant player with leading market share should lead to highly predictable and mostly recurring revenue. Sure enough, investors can see it in the numbers given Booz's long track record of success. The firm has grown revenue every year over the past 10 years. Its average annual growth rate has been almost 9%. Earnings per share, EPS, has grown even faster, at an average annual rate of over 17% during that same period. Even during this reset year, revenue and EPS should still be up. Not bad for a down year. At its current price of $90 per share, BAH is trading at a price-to-earnings, P.E., ratio of 15x. The P.E. ratio here has ranged from 16x to as high as 28x over the past 10 years. So today this stock is as cheap as it has been in the past decade. Just a historical average multiple of 21x on next year's $7.40 of earnings would mean a $155 stock, a huge upside from today's price. Normally, that kind of potential gain is reserved for very risky companies, not legal monopolies with a long track record of growth year in and year out. No more consulting is needed here. This stock is a buy. Action to take: buy Booz Allen Hamilton, NYSE, BHA, up to $125 per share every month. We highlight three current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point, and we include those with the best buying opportunity as our best buys. While we sometimes alternate which companies we list as our best buys, removing a stock from the list does not necessarily mean we no longer recommend it to its buy up to price, nor does it imply a recommendation to sell shares in that company once it is no longer a best buys. It's only that the new picks present an even more compelling investment opportunity. Let us know what you think. Feedback at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the best buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.